Last week we talked about superhero superpowers. All of the movies that are out there depicting superheroes that can do things like fly or have X-ray vision. And none of us have those powers. I mean, but we want to make the world a better place. We want to be able to fight evil. So this week we're going to talk about the power of speaking the truth in love. It's a misunderstood concept, I think, and to do this, we're going to look at the prophet Nathan and his willingness to speak the truth in love to King David. So, what was that? Did you hear that? Hey Herb, I think I heard an explosion over there. Can you check it out?
I thought I heard something too. Yeah.
Time for the Herb Hammer.
Is everything okay?
Everything's just fine. I'll put back together with a few modifications.
Hey, nice hammer. Let me see that.
That's the Herb Hammer.
Oh. Neighborhood superheroes. Oh, man. Guy that comes up with that stuff is overpaid. Thank you, Herb and Sue Ann. Great job. You see, once again, we spare no expense for special effects. So, we don't all own a Herb Hammer, but we all do have gifts and graces that God has placed in us to make the world a better place. One of them is to, some of us just have a prophetic voice, or we have moments when it's time to lift a prophetic voice to speak the truth in love. You and I don't really understand kings. We don't get it. We're Americans. Anybody that had a king in America has been gone for a long time, and when it comes to America and wars against king, we're undefeated. We're 1-0. We're about to celebrate that independence again from those crazy English and their tea and crumpets and their queen with her rotten wave and all that stuff. And so we don't understand a king or a queen. It's not a part of our history. But democracy is just, the social studies teacher in me that only got a short time to be able to shine before this whole ministry thing started 20-some-odd years ago. And I would emphasize with my students that democracy is just a short experiment. It's less than 300 years old. And for most of human history, power has been thought to emanate from one person or from a small group of people. And whatever the king said would go, you know. It's good to be the king, that old Mel Brooks movie, right? It's good to be the king. And so we can't conceive of kings. So when Nathan speaks in opposition of King David, this is reflective of something that is very different about Israel that doesn't exist for the most part, in that world that they lived in. This idea that justice doesn't come directly out of a sitting ruler. I mean, there's a new musical that's out. It's in Chicago. It's headed towards Broadway. It started in London. one of our children of this congregation, her name is Megan Farley, is working on this musical. It's called The Six, S-I-X, The Six. And it's a musical about the wives of Henry VIII. And they're singing about how each of them, how their marriage came to end and what their relationship with Henry was like. I mean, the fact of the matter is that with a king, if you stand out and you call the king out publicly like Nathan does, or even if you do it privately, more likely than not, the king's going to take your life, or the king's going to throw you in prison. You and I have freedom of speech, and we fight for that freedom of speech, but Nathan doesn't have, at least not in most of the world, freedom of speech. But God's people have something that's a little bit different when it comes to their understanding of what's right and what's wrong. See, in Genesis, we're told that we're created in the image of God, imago Dei, the image of God. So you and I reflect who God is. We bear God's likeness, and because of that, we're told, dominion over all the earth. Earth becomes our responsibility to take care of, and to manage, and to take stewardship over. And so this basic idea that you and I have some sort of sacred worth, that you and I are protected and should be protected and have some sort of basic human right because it's given by God, this is unique in the world. In most instances, whatever the king or the queen say, whoever's in charge, if they speak, it's like God is speaking. I don't know if you've ever met anybody like that. But when they speak, every time they speak, they think God is speaking. But that's the world that Nathan lives in. That's most of human history. And so this idea that there's this unalienable right. I mean, don't confuse this idea. I'm not one of the people that believe that Christianity in and of itself is built into the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. I'm very much cognizant of the idea that the people that came over here from Europe were sick of that already. They came here looking for freedom of religion. They didn't want a state church. They didn't want a state religion. They didn't want to be told how they were going to worship and what they could, when it came to God, what they could do and what they didn't want to do. Actually, most of the framers of the Constitution were deists. And deists are people who believe that God takes no action in the world, that there is a God and that God created the world, but much like a watchmaker, once this creation is made, the watchmaker has no part in the watch actually functioning. So the deists believe that if you wanted the world to succeed, you had to make it succeed. That God had given you all the tools to be able to do this, but it was up to each one of us to make this work. And the deists were not ignorant of Scripture. I don't want to present this as like somehow they're disconnected, that these ideas are disconnected from Scripture, because they actually got them out of the Bible. Been to Monticello. It's a remarkable place. It was designed by Thomas Jefferson as his home, and had the opportunity to see and to learn about Jefferson's Bible. And Jefferson was a deist. And Jefferson, what he did was he took out of Jesus' words, he took a razor blade and he cut out all of the stories about miraculous healings or like Jesus walking on the water or any of those kinds of things. He took out all the supernatural stuff and he just boiled down the Gospels down to Jesus' teaching. But when he got down to Jesus' teaching, he was left with the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall inherit the kingdom of heaven. He got down to the great commandment, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jefferson recognized the genius in this, the divinity in it. For him, that was enough. And so he took these, and others took these ideas, and they made them a part of this country that we live in. That you and I have unalienable rights. That our rights don't come from Congress, they don't come from the Supreme Court, they don't come from a president. They come from God. They come from a supreme being. They come from a creator. And they are a part of the foundation of the world that we live in. That's fundamental to who we are as Americans, but it's also fundamental to who God's people have. It's fundamental to how God's people have always understood themselves. Imago Dei. We are created in the image of God. And because we are created in the image of God, there's this sense that each one of us is a person of sacred worth. And so even a prophet could speak out against a king in Israel. It's unique. Now, not every prophet was successful. Not every king thirsted to be a man after God's own heart, as David describes himself in the Psalms. I mean, David really wanted to know who God is and what God wanted in him and through him. He wanted to have the same heart for his people and for the world that God has. And so when Nathan speaks, David is primed to listen. And so his crime, I mean, he hadn't looted the treasury, or, you know, he hadn't used the military to defeat a political enemy, or any of the sorts of things that you would think of in terms of a ruler. But he uses his position and influence to essentially steal another man's wife, a woman who he impregnated before her husband was dead. And Nathan calls him out. When we call someone out, when we speak the truth in love, first and foremost, we need to be grounded. We need to be grounded in Scripture. We need to be grounded in this idea that everyone has sacred worth. This idea that when we speak, we want to measure what we say, not by what we think is true, but by what Scripture says is true about justice and about human rights and about the protections of others, about loving our neighbor and about loving God and understanding our place in all of these things. Nathan doesn't speak simply on Nathan's behalf. Nathan isn't trying to extort anything out of David. He's not trying to shame David because he's a prophet and David isn't. He's not trying to misuse his position. Nathan is concerned about Israel. He's concerned about David. He's concerned about Bathsheba. He's concerned about order in the life of God's people. He's concerned about the precedent that's set for the future. Can Israel's kings just act like all the other kings of the world? Nathan's words are grounded in this idea of Imago Dei, image of God. And so when we speak, you know, we don't want to be like the people down south who can say whatever they want and just follow it up with those simple words, bless his heart, right? Right. It looks like he's got a third eye in the middle of his head. Bless his heart. He's as sharp as a marble. Bless his heart. That pastor is not a very good director or writer of skits, bless his heart. We don't want to be like that person who just kind of arbitrarily says whatever it is that they think and then try and hide behind some sort of, you know, we don't want to use God. We don't want to put God out front of us in some sort of way so that when we speak, we want people to think that God is speaking. We don't want that. We need to measure what it is that we have to say before we speak out. We need to be clear. Is this a matter of justice? Is this a matter of truth? Is this a matter of human rights? Is this a matter of righteousness, of what's truly right? Before we speak, we need to measure those things. And then secondly, we need to think about who it is that we're speaking to and how it'll be received. A more righteous person is going to be more likely to receive whatever it is that you say to him or her. When I first got involved in the ministry, today is the first Sunday for new appointments in the United Methodist Church. So pastors have moved, about a third of all of our pastors have actually moved in the last week. And they're all preaching. They were at a church last week. One church last week, they moved, and this morning they're preaching at a new church. Pretty amazing, isn't it? I can't even remember what that's like anymore. This is my 16th year since I've returned. This is year 16. 13 is the lead pastor, and 3 is the chief spear carrier. But you have all of these people. You have all of these people that have moved around. When I first got started here, if you didn't know, I started here as a youth director 27 years ago. 27, 28 years ago. I started as a youth director while I was still in college. I thought I was going to do this a year, and then that was going to be it. And, man proposes, God disposes. But I remember, you might find this hard to believe, but when I first started here as a youth director, I used to get criticized occasionally. The first children's ministry, children's time, we used to have this thing called a children's time in the service. We still do it first service. And the kids all come forward and the pastor tells like a little story or whatever. Now when I do children's time first service, I just give away candy because I just want to be the favorite person. I just give away candy. But I like came up with a story and I described Jesus' disciples as his 12 buds who he liked to hang out with. And there were people waiting for me at the back of the sanctuary after I got done with that children's time to dress me down for describing the disciples in this manner. And so it went, and so it went, and so it went. And I remember I was frustrated because it seemed like I couldn't do anything right. And my supervising pastor at the time was an associate pastor by the name of Barry Burns. He's now my district superintendent. You know, God just keeps blessing that guy over and over again. And but anyhow, I remember I went in and I talked to Barry. Barry called me in and somebody complained about something. And I was like, Barry, it's like I can't do anything right. And Barry said these words. He said, listen, if you want to grow in the likeness of Jesus, when you receive criticism, seek out the truth in it. Not everything that everybody says about you that's critical is true. But there might be some truth in it. And you need to seek that out. And you can dismiss the rest. But you can't be afraid to receive correction. You can't be afraid to receive advice. You can't be afraid to receive instruction. The person who knows everything about everything is the person to be afraid of. And I've never forgotten those words. You know, you want to be that person. Not only do you want to measure out before you speak what perspective you're speaking from, but on the flip side, in terms of thinking about who it is that you're speaking to or when you're receiving a word of truth, you want to think about the nature of that person that you're speaking to. Nathan knew David's heart. Now, there were some prophets that didn't care, and they spoke anyway. And they knew that what was going to be received was going to be unpopular. It's one thing to speak to David. It's one thing to speak to Queen Jezebel, who had no problem putting the prophets of God to death, because all she cared about was power. But you have to remember, not only when we speak, not only what it is that we're saying, but thinking about how it's going to be received. And then finally, when we speak, asking ourselves the question, does this fulfill the mandate in Genesis of Imago Dei, of everybody understanding that each of us has been created in the image of God? There's a great scene, we don't have the clip this morning, but there is a great scene in the movie Hidden Figures. And I don't know if you saw, that was the movie about the mathematician women that work for NASA. And there's a great scene in the movie where one of the women that works in this computation department that's trying to figure out how to get people out to the moon and back, and they're doing all the math, and this is before computers, where she is late getting back, and she's drenched because the only restroom, she's a person of color, and the only restroom that she has that she's allowed to use is clear on the other side of NASA's facility. And so to walk over there and do what needs to be done and come back takes more than 40 minutes. And when she comes back, her boss dresses her down in front of everybody else. Where have you been? Why is it every time you go to the restroom, it takes like 10 times longer, 5 times longer than everyone else? And she just snaps. I'm treated differently. I understand what the law is. I understand what the rules are. Not every law that man creates is a just law. Not every rule is a just rule. But Dr. Martin Luther King had this to say: how does one determine when a law is just or unjust? A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law. An unjust law is a human law that is rooted in eternal and natural law. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust. All segregation statutes are unjust because segregation distorts the soul and damages the personality. So it's this idea that when we speak out, are we seeking to bring forth this moral law that emanates from this place that is beyond what is written? Because often what is written is not just. Often what we see before us in our school or in our workplace or in our community or in our church or wherever we are, it might be in line with whatever the written code is, but it's not necessarily just. It's not necessarily moral. When we encounter people treating other people shamefully, making judgments based upon incomplete or imperfect information, if God gives us a word, if this is not just coming from us, and if this is about trying to increase the righteousness of this world that we live in, And it does the part of taking someone who's seen as less than being created in the image of God, when they really need to be seen that way. And when we speak, when it's time to speak, we do so choosing our words carefully. Our youth group was in Nashville this last week. Actually, our youth group and Trinity United Methodist in town, their youth groups are together. They call themselves Shaunity. They're the Shaunity Youth Ministry. And every day there was like a little description of what the kids did each and every day. And for those who have been around long enough and can remember when I was a youth director here, when I used to take kids on mission trips, I liked to work them to death. That was my idea of a good mission trip. Take them down to South Carolina, put them out there in 102 degree sun and work them to death. And when I heard the stuff, they're going down to Nashville and they're going to work in this children's center and other stuff, I thought, well, that's all well and good, but it's not a real mission trip because they're not working them to death. But I watched every day what the kids were doing. And one of the days this week, the kids got the opportunity to go out into the Nashville community and go meet people who are homeless. They had to ask them, find out from them, where do you go when you're homeless on a hot day to get out of the heat and underneath some shelter? When you're homeless, where do you go to get something to drink? When you're homeless and you're hungry, where do you go to get something to eat? If you're sick, where do you go to receive medical treatment? I saw that. I saw that our kids from our church, instead of just making value judgments about people who are homeless and why they're homeless, instead, I saw that they were sitting down and listening to people that were homeless. Imago Dei, created in the image of God. And I prayed when I read that. I pray that these kids that have this experience, that it informs them, no matter where they're at in their life, whether they're in business or whether they're teachers or whether they're lawyers or whether they work in a factory or whatever it is, if they work for the state on a road crew or, you know, if they work in the city, if they're elected mayor or they're on city council, whatever it is, if they're part of a service club or organization. Or most importantly, when they grow up and they find a church of their own and they choose to continue to practice the faith there and seek to sow down into that community and through that community and out into the world the message of the gospel, that we are to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves, that they would not forget that experience. But everybody is Imago Dei, created in the image of God. And so let us speak clearly and carefully with all humility, always measuring our own intentions and who we are, as we seek to lift one another up as God intended from the beginning.